Welcome to the Geek Therapy Radio Podcast. Welcome back to the Geek Therapy Radio Podcast. If you're a regular listener, if you've listened to at least one show before, I'm your mental curator, Johnny Hamburger. And in this podcast, I just wanted to bring everybody up to speed with my current albatrosses, my current headaches in my geek world that I'm dealing with. And it has become twofold. I'll tell you what those are, but this is also a show where I'm reaching out to you for suggestions, particularly electricians, those of you who have majors in EE or electronics engineering, or you're just electronics whizzes, you're electronics geeks. I would love and absolutely adore your input on one of these issues. It involves lithium iron phosphate batteries and a BMS and a 24-volt lawnmower and motor and induction and voltage sag and all that, but we'll get to that in a minute. So my first albatross, my first headache is ongoing. It is my 2010 Audi S5 with a no-crank, no-start issue. I've been diagnosing that. I'll tell you where I'm at right now, and if anybody has any suggestions, I am absolutely open to it. Geektherapy@iheartmedia.com. That's the direct email, geektherapy@iheartmedia.com, or just leave me something on this submission form, the contact submission form on the website, geektherapyradio.com, or just get at me on Twitter, geektherapyradio on Twitter. I think it's technically at geektherapykprc on Twitter, but just type in geektherapyradio on Twitter. Look for the red, white, and black color scheme in. That's me. So if you have any advice on this, let me know. So here's where I'm at with the Audi. It is still sitting outside the front of my house, not moving anywhere, no crank, no start issue. Here's the process of elimination. Here's where I'm at. Brand new battery, no difference. A few months ago, I put in a new starter, and it was fine. So the starter's new. I just put in a new battery. I have also checked all of the fuses, every single fuse that I could find in the car. So on the driver's side, on the passenger side front, underneath the bonnet or the hood, by the ECU, there's fuses in there with a bunch of relays. I've checked them all out. I've swapped all the relays. I've checked all the relays. Back in the trunk, the luggage compartment, I've checked all those fuses and relays. They're all good. There's no water. There's no water damage. There's no corrosion. The wires look great. Every point of grounding that I could find on the chassis looks wonderful, but I've even unscrewed the grounding screw, and I've wiggled the wires around, made sure the contacts are nice and clean, and screwed the grounding screws back in. They all look great. They all function great. I'm getting 12 volts everywhere. I'm getting battery voltage at every point I check. Every fuse is perfect, not even burned, not even halfway melted, just the electrical system in this car looks absolutely pristine. So I got an email a week or so ago from a listener, Christian. He said that his wife had a 2010 Nissan Altima, so the exact same year as my Audi. And thank you very much, Christian, for sending me your email. He says that she had problems also with turning on the car, and it turned out to be the brake switch. And in his case, all it required was disconnecting the brake switch on the back of the brake pedal and then plugging it back in, and then the car started fine again. So in my research and all the forums I'm going through, trying to diagnose this problem, as we geeks do whenever we have problems we can't figure out, it's to the forums. It's to the Google. It leads us to some pretty crazy places sometimes. So this no crank, no start issue, all coming back to the brake switch, the brake light switch. It's a common phrase that comes up, especially among Audi forums, not just with Audi S5, but Audis from all year models. And from the email here from Christian, Nissans and any sort of modern car with stability control systems and fancy computers and everything, a lot of it can be traced back to the brake switch. And I've been in denial about this. I guess for the past 2 weeks or so, my car hasn't been running for probably 2 or 3 weeks. And in the back of my mind, I kept seeing that brake switch idea popping up in different forums, not just with Audi, but with different cars, and even Christian reaching out about the brake switch. And in the back of my mind, I'm just like, I refuse to believe it's that simple, that a $30 brake switch is the root of all the problems. Maybe it's my mind. I was just being more doomsday about it. It's like, there's no way it's just a little switch. Even though most problems can be rooted out as being something very, very simple that you overlook. And I thought the simple problem was just, okay, there's a problem with the starting circuit, with the starter relay, or with the 35-amp starter fuse that feeds the relay. And all. And so my focus was there. But the more I thought about it, I was just deducing in my mind that it could be the brake switch, because every code, every fault that comes up on the screen when I try to start my car, it's immediately ESP fault, parking brake fault, traction control fault, tire pressure monitoring fault, everything having to do with the stability control program, the anti-slip, the Audi Quattro program, the all-wheel drive, basically. All of the problems were – all the readouts, I wasn't able to scan it because I can't find anybody with the VagCom computer to scan these Volkswagen codes. But all the codes that my display in the Audi are saying, because every other electrical function works perfectly. The high beams, the radio, everything in the car functions perfectly. I just can't start it, and it's because it's throwing all these codes about the stability system. So the more I was thinking about that, well, if it's all the stability system, maybe what's happening is, and I joked about it a few weeks ago saying, oh, the rear cigarette lighter wasn't working and that's why it's locked out. Well, it makes more sense that the computer is first reading that the brake light switch is working fine, that the brakes are working fine, that would be the first system that it checks. So if it goes to that brake light switch, that brake pedal switch first, and detects a fault there, it makes sense that it would give me a Christmas tree of faults, Christmas tree lights of faults, having everything to do with the stability control program and the all-wheel drive. If it detects a fault with the brakes, that means the computer doesn't know how to modulate the brakes effectively to all four wheels. So it just says, you know what, there's a problem with the brake switch, so we don't know how to brake any of the four wheels for the stability control. So we're just going to – the car is unsafe to drive. Also, the computer is saying, the computer is thinking that the car is completely unsafe to drive, because if it can't – if it's something with the brake switch, it doesn't want you driving without brakes. It's just going to assume you don't have brakes, or it's just going to assume you don't have control. So it makes more sense that – it could all be because of the brake switch. So here's where I'm at right now. And I want your opinions on that. If you are car people, if you're car geeks and you've worked with a lot of modern cars, please let me know. Or if you've had a similar experience, yeah, it was just the brake switch in my car, whether it was an Audi or Mercedes or Toyota or Nissan like Christian's, or Hondas or Toyota, whatever. Let me know if you've had a similar problem with a no crank, no start. That means your car engine won't even turn over. When you go to turn the key, just absolutely nothing happens. The engine doesn't do jack squat. If you've had this no crank, no start issue, and tell me what it wound up being in your case. And I'm especially curious if a lot of it comes down to that brake light switch. So here's where I'm at right now. I just ordered a new brake light switch for the Audi. It was $30. It hasn't shipped yet because a lot of suppliers are for the pandemic, are having problems with shipping and supplying these parts. So I don't have a tracking number yet. The brake light switch could be here in 2 days, or it could be here in 2 weeks, or it could be here in 2 months. I don't know. I've ordered from this place before. I think, what is it? Audi USA, Audi Parts USA or something.com. I ordered some bolts for the muffler, and they got here within like a day or two, super fast. But that's not the case with this brake light switch. So I've ordered it, and I'm just waiting for it. What I haven't done over the past few days is because it's been so unbelievably blistering hot here in Houston, Texas. It's been over 100 degrees for the past 2 or 3 days. I think we're going on 3 days in a row of over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Pretty hot, no matter where you are in the world. So the last thing I wanted to do was spend any extra time outside that I could. So I've spent more time inside tinkering on projects like the lawnmower, which is the second albatross of mine, and we'll get to in a moment. So I haven't been out there to work on the Audi anymore, because the next thing I want to try is jumping that brake light switch somehow, testing that brake light switch, maybe just unplugging and plugging back in the brake light switch, making sure the terminals of the brake light switch are all clean. Maybe I'll do that tonight. Probably not. It's still so hot outside. Even when the sun goes down, it's so hot. But anyways, maybe tonight or sometime soon, I will get up under the dashboard there by the brake pedal, and I have to remove a couple of torque screws to remove a panel by all the clutch, brake, and gas pedal. That gives you access to that brake switch. And what I'm going to do is what Christian emailed me about. He said in his wife's Altima, he literally just unplugged the brake switch and plugged the brake switch back in, and then the car worked again. And I understand that, unplugging and plugging things back in, because that helps clean the terminals. It helps make a better electrical contact. So it makes sense that something as easy as just fiddling with the switch a little bit, just reconnecting and connecting the switch would fix the problem. Maybe the you get some oxidation on the terminals. It's not making a good connection. Some dust or dirt gets in there. It's not making the greatest connection or a good enough connection. It could just be that it's not making a good enough connection, that it's throwing a fault to the computer. So I will fiddle with that switch sooner or later. Maybe tonight, that it's hot on, fresh on the mind. I'll see what the switch looks like, because honestly, I'm not going to blow smoke up your ears right now. Your ears or rears right now with pretending that I know exactly what the terminal looks like. I suppose I could look at the switch itself online. There's obviously a picture of it. Can you jump the switch? Some switches are two-stage switches. And what stages would I jump? Would I jump both of them? We'll see. I'll fiddle with that switch, and I'm crossing my fingers that fiddling with that switch, jumping the lead to that switch, will at least trick the computer into thinking, hey, the brake light switch is just fine. We'll let you start the engine. If I jump the lead to the brake light switch and the engine starts, I'll have pinpointed that it was the brake light switch, and I'll be so happy about that. One thing, here's the losses so far, financial losses with diagnosing this problem. And it's a loss depending on which way you look at it. The only money I've put into it so far has been the brand new battery, and I spent, I think it was $200 or so on this battery. It's an AGM battery. It's a nice battery. I specifically went with a nice battery because I thought, well, I'll spend a little more now so I don't have to spend, you know, a lot more later. If you get cheap batteries, you have to replace cheap batteries more often. I said, you know what, I'll just put a good battery in here and just not have to worry about it for another few years. So, and the battery I had in there was probably from 2016. The thing is, though, I reconditioned the battery. The only reason I got a new battery is because even after I reconditioned the old battery and it was pulling load just fine, pulling current just fine, and taking current just fine, even still, I thought, I'll just put a new battery in there anyway. So now what I have is two good car batteries. I have the AGM battery that's in the Audi right now, so I know that that's definitely good. That's a top quality. What brand did I get? It's like a gold edition, gold series, diehard, or something like that. It's a good battery. I don't know if many of you are loyalists to battery brands, but it's a diehard platinum or something. It's really, really good battery. Costs about $200. So I have the brand new battery in it, and I figured, well, the old battery was 4 or 5 years old anyways. It might as well be time to switch it out. If it's not bad now, it'll go bad soon. But I topped up. I checked the gravity of each cell. I stuck my gravity tool in there and sucked up a little bit of the battery acid into the chamber and saw it float to perfectly good charge. So the gravity of each cell is good. And then basically you're checking the gravity, quote unquote, of each battery cell to make sure that the balance of electrolyte to water is good. So you have the perfect balance of what is it, sulfuric acid and water, so that there's a charge, the electrolyte is good. That's called checking the gravity of your battery acid in each cell. was perfect. Six cells, 12-volt battery has six cells, and each of the six cells was perfectly good. And I topped up the acid, and I charged it up nice and slow, and I had my pipette, my eyedropper, and I would remove excess battery acid as it would kind of come up to make sure every cell had perfectly good levels of battery acid. And the battery is so, it's perfect. That old battery right now is perfect. I'm wondering how I can use it in the DeLorean, because the DeLorean definitely needs a new battery. The problem is the old Audi battery that I've reconditioned is way too big to fit in the battery compartment of the DeLorean. So we'll see. I've got an extra car battery right now. And Rowdy has a new battery that'll last her probably in between the probably next 2 to 5 years easily. So I'm in the hole, $200 for the new battery and $30 plus $5 shipping or whatever, $35 for the brake switch. And I'm hoping that's all it is. If I get out of this debacle with a 10-year-old Audi, having just spent $230 or so on fixing it, and $200 of that being unnecessary, anybody with a German car, whether it's a Volkswagen or an Audi or a Mercedes or whatever, you know that if you get out of a problem for $200, $230, you're doing pretty good. So that's the current state of the car. And I am where I'm at right now is focusing on that brake switch, the brake light switch. I've heard other people say that that's what it amounted to in their cars. I'm fixated on the brake light switch, and I will go from there. If you have any thoughts on that, if you have any advice, any tips for me, please, please email me, especially if you have a Volkswagen or an Audi. All the parts in Volkswagen and Audis and even Seats and Skoda and all that, it's all the same company. Bugatti, it's all the same. Lamborghini, all the same parts, effectively. Maybe Lamborghini parts aren't 100% Audi, but I don't know, actually. I know that Volkswagen, Audi owns Lamborghini and Bugatti and all that. I'm sure there are some parts to Bugattis and Lamborghinis that are you won't find in a Jetta. But for the most part, you will. Like window switches and buttons and things like that, in a $2 million Bugatti, you will find in a $15,000 Jetta. That's just the way car companies work. So if you own a car from any of those brands especially, and you've had this no crank, no start issue, please let me know what the issue was for you. I would love you forever, and I would give you a shout out on the show for whatever that's worth. I would just be internally indebted to your help with this matter. Okay, moving on to my second ball and chain, my second albatross, my second pain in the butt, which I hesitate to call a pain in the butt because it's not as critical as having a 5,000-pound vehicle paperweight outside of your house on the street, but it is my lawnmower. I have a 24-volt Works, what is it, WG775 model lawnmower that I've had since 2011 or 2012. And I've mentioned it previously on the show. It's 24 volts. It just had stock. The battery pack is just two 12-volt SLA sealed lead acid batteries wired in series to give you 24 volts. I have updated those batteries two or three times in the past just to new lead acid batteries. They run out over two or three years, and I replace the batteries with the new lead acid batteries. So I had the bright idea this time to invest in, because they were cheap enough, two lithium iron phosphate batteries from that company I told you about called Miatti. So it was $45 for a 16 amp hour, 12 volt lithium iron phosphate battery. So I got two of them. Every single LiFePO battery, 12 volt LiFePO battery, is branded as drop-in replacements for SLA, drop-in replacements for sealed lead acid batteries. But there's a caveat there. Lithium iron phosphate batteries have a BMS computer in them, BMS circuitry, which stands for battery management system, because what makes up a lithium iron phosphate battery are just multiple cells of little batteries, of 18650 batteries, but lithium iron phosphate, and maybe it's not 18650, but you know what I'm saying? lithium batteries that go into your vapes, lithium batteries that go into any your remote control cars and racing drones and all that, they're usually made up of individual cylinder cells. They just look like bigger, fatter AA batteries. So what makes up a lithium iron phosphate 12-volt battery is several of these battery cells wired up in series and parallel to give you 12 volts. And all of those individual cells are managed by the BMS, the battery management system, to make sure each cell is at a perfect balanced voltage with each other, that you have exact voltages across each cell. So one cell isn't overcharging while the other one is undercharging, or one isn't being depleted too much while the other one still has juice. That's all kept balanced so that you get smooth capacity out of the battery pack as a whole, and you're not damaging the battery. The BMS is meant to protect the entire battery by managing the individual cells within that battery. So here's the thing, though. That BMS has two cutoff voltages, in mine at least. The cutoff voltage is, the undervolt protection is 10 volts. That means that the overall output of the entire 12-volt battery, the nominal voltage is 12.8 volts, but if it goes below 10 volts, it shuts itself off. It cuts off the output to protect itself, to protect the battery, so that you don't discharge it too much. If you discharge too much, you can damage the cells or one of the individual cells, and it's no good. I understand it. It's good to have that undervoltage protection, and 10 volts is it. If it dips down to 10 volts, if it goes down to 9.99 volts, battery shuts off completely to protect itself. Similarly, the overvoltage is like 14.6 or 14.7, might be as high as 15. It's 14.7-ish, around there. That's to protect it from overcharging. If you're charging the battery and it goes up over 14.8 volts, the battery shuts off. It opens its own circuit so that it can't accept any more charge. These are two protection features. It also has overcurrent protection, so you don't put too big of a load, big of a stress on the battery. Oh, it damaged the cells. It'll cut it off. If it's over a certain amperage, I think it's something like 80 amps. It says it can handle 80 amps for 3 seconds before cutting off. Perhaps that's true. So here's the issue that I'm having. You wouldn't typically use this type of lithium iron phosphate battery with this type of BMS in a situation to, let's say, start a car. So that car starter, when you turn the key over on your engine, on whatever car, and the battery, your car battery, the 12-volt lead-acid battery, is sending just a sucker punch, friggin' Ryu Shoryuken uppercut of current to your starter to kick that engine over. It is a ton of load. It's an inductance load. It's tremendous. A good way to picture this is, in your house, when your air conditioner comes on and you notice all the lights in your house dim for a second, that's because that electric motor coming on in your air conditioner at your house is causing a voltage sag across the entire system. So your house is at 120 volts coming in from the power lines, and your AC turns on and all the lights in your house dip for a second. That's because that 120 volts goes down to something like 100 volts in North America is what I'm talking about. In Europe, it would be 220, 240 volts. Same thing could happen. Your air conditioner starts on, a big heavy load comes on, and then you notice that your lights dim just for a second. Sometimes it happens when you turn on your computer, you notice the lights dim. It's a huge load put on the system just for a split second, and you get that voltage sag, and everything comes back up. Once the motor is running, the electric motor is running, you're at that normal nominal voltage again. It just takes a lot of brute force to take something standing still to make it then go to 5,000 RPM or whatever it is. It's not that much, but you get what I'm saying. An electric motor, a big electric motor, is a very heavy piece of stationary thing not rotating. So it takes a big punch of current to start it rotating. Once it's rotating, it's kinetic energy. It can just run with normal amount of voltage, normal amount of amps. But that initial startup can be hundreds of amps. Let's say it's a 10-amp motor, runs on 12 volts and 10 amps just to keep it running at a normal RPM. 10 amps, 12 volts, that's fine when it's running. But to get it started, it's going to be like 300 amps for a split second to get it to push it over. You get what I'm saying. I've spent enough time on that. But it was painting the picture to tell you what's going on with my electric lawnmower. The electric lawnmower is just a DC motor, a 24-volt electric motor that needs a big kick of amperage to start that blade spinning. So it's not just the motor that needs to be spinning. I have this big, these big counterweights on the end of the shaft in the form of a blade, a big giant sword on each end, that also the inertia there, it needs to be pushed into spinning. So you can, maybe the electricians out there know where I'm going with this. The lawnmower stock comes with sealed lead acid batteries. That voltage sag, when you first start that inductive load of starting up a DC motor in this case, that means that for a split second, those batteries aren't at 24 volts. For a split second, it's sending out just a monstrous spike of current. And when you have a monstrous spike of current, your voltage goes down. So that 24 volts, when at initial startup, is probably going down to something like 16 or 17 or 15 volts. Each of the individual 12-volt batteries in there, the 12-volt lead-acid batteries in there, is probably dipping all the way down to 9 volts or something like that. Your car does the exact same thing. When you start your car, if you had a voltage reading on the battery, you would see the voltage across the battery for a split second dip down to something like 9.5 volts and then immediately go back up to 12 volts or whatever it should be. So the same type of voltage sag is happening when I am running this 24-volt electric lawnmower. The difference is lead-acid batteries don't have that BMS, battery management system, on there, and it can take that voltage sag. It's a dumb technology, just dumb meaning there's no computers involved in it. It dips down to that 20 volts and then comes up quickly back to the 24 volts. That's fine for lead-acid batteries. They can handle that. Lithium iron phosphate batteries, most of them, can't. That BMS, remember I said that the voltage when you start the lawnmower isn't just a perfect linear 24 volts. When you start that motor, it dips down to below 20 volts. Well, it's two 12-volt lithium iron phosphate batteries in series, so going down below 20 volts in a 24-volt system, that means each battery in my system is dipping below that 10-volt threshold. So the BMS is seeing that voltage drop and then cutting off the batteries to protect itself. Does that make sense? I know a lot of electricians out there know exactly what I'm talking about here, but hopefully you're gleaning enough kind of rough, gross, oversimplifying information from this anecdote to help you kind of better understand what I'm talking about here. So I've hit the start switch on the lawnmower, and the motor kicks for a second, and then it just stops because that voltage sag is triggering that BMS under voltage protection, and it just locks me out. The battery is just, it's not dead, it's just protecting itself. You wake the battery back up by putting the battery on the charger, and it wakes the batteries back up. You haven't lost any capacity or anything like that, not much over the course of a split second. But you have to plug the batteries back into the charger to wake them up, to reset that BMS, to allow you to have that voltage again, allow you access to the battery capacity. So this, how do I get this electric lawnmower to function normally? I have been able to get the motor to run on the lithium iron phosphate batteries by, this is super dangerous, I took the blade off the bottom of the lawnmower. I thought, well, I'll just take this weight off the motor and see if that helps anything. It did a little bit. What you do is you spin the motor like an old car. You crank it with your own hand just to spin it, and then you hit the switch as much as possible so that when the motor's actually spinning, you know, when you've spun it up, it's not so much of a current that needs to go into it to keep it spinning. Or spin it up faster. It's just that going from zero to something is the hard part. But going from something to faster isn't nearly as hard on the battery. So it doesn't trip that voltage sag. So if I pre-spin the motor and then start the lawnmower with my lithium iron phosphate batteries, it runs fine. It runs like a champ. Holy crap, I would not want to have my hand anywhere near that. It is awesome. It's going to absolutely chew through my lawn perfectly. The issue is that if I take my hand off the starting switch and let the motor go back to zero, and then I try to start it again from a standstill, that trips. There's too much of a voltage sag. That's my dilemma. So here's where I'm left. Here's what I'm thinking. Again, any electricians, please get at me with your advice or trips or tips on this. At first, I was thinking, what kind of simple circuit can I come up with to reduce that initial load? Instead of having the electric motor just instantly on, what if I could design a circuit to just gradually ramp up the voltage or the current over a few seconds to get that the blade spinning much more gradually, kind of like the fan curve of your CPU fans? What if I can get a circuit to ramp up? And that's my question. Electrical engineers, let me know about that if that's an option. Any way to reduce that initial load on the batteries, some sort of, I thought about a potentiometer maybe, using a pot to lower the voltage a little bit. I don't know. See, I'm thinking of how I can reduce that initial load. Some sort of capacitors involved maybe, use the capacitors to punch that motor into gear, but then the capacitor will cut itself off if it's at nominal voltage. Nothing will pass through it. It's kind of a headache, and I'm sorry if you're listening to this and you don't have any care in the world about electricity or whatever, but this is something that's on my geek brain for sure right now. The lawnmower does have a switch on it for eco mode or high power mode. And I'm thinking it doesn't start in eco mode. Let me just tell you that right now. It doesn't start in high power mode. But that, to me, that's just... Am I wrong in thinking that those are just two different resistors in the circuit? That low power mode is just a resistor that's reducing the amount of power going to the electric motor, and then high power mode is just a resistor that allows more current, more electricity to the electric motor? So if I just patched in a potentiometer there, that maybe I could set it so low just to get the blade kind of, you know, just limping along, spinning low, and then I just ramp up the pot, ramp up the dial, and it spins faster. That way it'll be a lot less low to start it at a low RPM and then ramp it up once the current spike is over with. That's one thought. The other thought is just to remove the BMS from the batteries entirely. To open up both batteries, I've already done this with one of them just to see what's going on inside. And you can see the BMS and its heat shield and everything, heat dissipator, right there on the top. One option is just get rid of that BMS and just maintain the batteries myself as best I can. Just be thorough with testing each cell every so often. Make sure one of them is not overvolting or undervolting with each other. Make sure that they're all balanced first, and then take the BMS off so I know that they're all balanced. And apparently, I'm not the first one to think of this. A lot of e-bike riders, those people with the electric bicycles and electric skateboards and stuff like that, they remove the BMS to get more current out of the batteries, and then they just themselves pay more attention to how they're charging and discharging the battery themselves rather than having it just rely on it all being automatic. So part of it is that I could just remove the BMS and make the batteries dumb, quote unquote, just take the management system out of it and just treat it like a normal lead acid battery. Now, this would, yes, I know, I can hear you screaming, electricians and the battery enthusiasts. I know that would probably reduce the lifespan of the battery. LiFePO batteries, lithium iron phosphate batteries, aren't designed for those high load usages like starting a motor. Some definitely are. But a lot of them aren't. At the end of the day, what I'm thinking is I am probably going to go the route, unless somebody emails me quickly after hearing this, I'm probably going to go the route of removing the BMS and just me being in charge of the current load on the batteries, and the draw and the discharge, and just being careful not to discharge it past 10 volts myself. I could probably put a little, it'd probably look pretty neat. I could probably just have a little voltmeter on my lawnmower, and I just keep an eye on it, and I could see if it goes down. You know, I could set some other circuit to cut off at 11 volts or something like that. Just keep an eye on that voltmeter while I mow the lawn. Okay, I got to 10.5 volts. Time to go put the lawnmower back on the charger. essentially, I'm the BMS at that point. I can't self-level each individual cell, but I can kind of keep an overall eye on the health of the battery. A BMS, removing the BMS also would mean that if I'm dumb, I could just look at the voltmeter and watch it go below 10 volts, go down to 9 volts, go down to 8.5 volts, and just be doing real damage to the battery itself. Whereas the BMS would protect itself and just not even allow you to do that. It would protect itself at 10 volts. So I'm just thinking, remove the BMS so that I can get those cranking amps, and it's not going to be anywhere near the level of a car starter, so it shouldn't be that terrible. I'm not the first one to do this, and there are a lot of enthusiasts out there who say, yeah, taking off the BMS is fine. You just have to do more work on your part to make sure that the battery is healthy. And I'm fine with that. I think removing the BMS and putting a voltmeter on the lawnmower to monitor the current rate of charge and discharge, I think that's a good starting point. But I can't wait for your emails or your Twitters or whatever, contacting me on the Geek Therapy Radio website to tell me how much of an idiot I'm being. Or if you're just like, yeah, that works. As long as you keep an eye on it yourself and don't rely on that BMS, then you'll be all right. Kind of interested in the feedback I might get from this. But I'm most interested in all that extra power and capacity for my electric lawnmower. I love breathing new life into old things. I don't like throwing away things that otherwise work perfectly fine. You'll read reviews for this lawnmower, the Works WG775 or whatever it is. People saying, it didn't last but a year. I threw it away. Well, that's because you didn't replace the batteries and you don't know what you're doing with batteries. And I don't blame you for not knowing how to replace the battery packs. That's kind of a little bit more DIY involved. But I am not in that boat where something doesn't work, I just throw it away. I will exhaust myself trying to fix it before I throw it away. If all it is that switch, I'm going to be glad that all it was that switch and that I fixed the switch myself, knowing that if I brought it to an Audi dealership, they would have quoted me $2,000 for the job when all it mounted up to be was a little friggin' brake light switch. Hopefully that's all it is. If it's not the brake light switch, we'll start wrapping up the podcast here. If it's not the brake light switch on the Audi, then I'm going to put the car up on ramps and start inspecting all the wiring going to the starter. But why would that be? Why would that be? The alternator is also fine. If it's not the brake light switch, I think my next area to look at would be the ECU, even though the ECU looks fine. It's perfect. I'm hoping it's not the ECU, because the ECU is several hundred dollars and it requires resetting and you still have to bring it to the dealership, and it's usually something simple and stupid. And I'm hoping that simple, stupid thing is that $30 brake switch. It would make all the sense in the world for it to be that brake switch. I hope that I can jump the switch and prove it before I even get the switch. All sorts of fun things that we involve ourselves in when we are geeks. I dreamed about my lawnmower issue last night. I dreamt about it, and I actually came to a conclusion in my dream that I remembered when I woke up. I don't have a lot of great wiring in the battery pack itself. There's little points of, not that great of contact between some points. And when you have just a little tiny little areas of contact, that's a lot of resistance, and resistance equals voltage drop. So I'm going to clean up all the wiring first before I remove the BMS, and we'll go from there as far as the battery's concerned. But we'll see about all that. I wonder what kind of neat bump music I'm going to play. Thank you so much for listening to Geek Therapy Radio. I'll keep you informed of what I'm doing. If you haven't listened to the last podcast, I had Colin from This Does Not Compute. We were talking about old recording technology, so ADAT and cassette tapes and things like that, as we are wont to do. Clint from LGR, Lazy Game Reviews, gave me his audio a little bit late. I already broadcast that audio about old audio, or that show about old audio gear with Colin, but Clint sent me his audio as well, so I will probably play that in a upcoming podcast. Maybe tomorrow I'll play Clint's audio from him weighing in on it. I tried to get David from the 8-Bit Guy. He was busy in Austin filming stuff. He He was texting me the other last night that he got a drone stuck in a tree, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, what a bummer! That sucks. Been there, done that. It sucks." So David is working on other videos. I don't know if he'd be happy with me telling you that, but it makes sense. It's a video series. He's teased to it in the video he and I were on. So all those guys are still in the mix. Matt Farah, the smoking tire, I asked him. He said he didn't have much audio experience other than he knows that podcasting, you need good mics in a good room. But he's not really a musician, so he couldn't speak to it. But anyways. Thank you for listening to the Geek Therapy Radio podcast. You are worthy of love, both giving and receiving love. You are also worthy of your own self-confidence. So embrace your inner geek. Dive into your geek thing. Dive into a hobby. Start tinkering with stuff. It's super fun, but be safe. Be safe if you're going out into public places. Just take just due diligence. Just take natural precautions, and I think we'll get through this together. So thank you so much for listening. Take care, and I'll talk to you tomorrow, hopefully, keeping up this streak.